It's not the experience that happens to us. It's the story we tell ourselves about that experience, which makes a difference. And so we can change that story. But I think what is so real for all of us is that whether it's a pity party or the pain comes from the stories that we've been told and stories we continue to tell ourselves of the way that we expected things to be.
Hi, brave friends. This is Jessica Pate, your host for Brave Together podcast, and I'm so glad that you have tuned in to today's episode. Remember that game we played as kids or teens or possibly in college with a few beers nearby, Truth or Dare? Do you remember that game? Well, as you recall, players ask you to say a truth or do a dare. A dare could be something risky or silly or something else. For our world as caregivers, the truth or truth-telling, which is hard to say, but ultimately helpful and freeing, and the dare is accepting the consequences of holding it all in, taking on roles such as people-pleasing, being in control, developing illness or suffering, challenges in marriages or relationships. Today's episode with life coaches Susanna Peace Lavelle and Cindy Kaplan was born out of a comment or conversation on Facebook. What is truth-telling versus acting like or playing the victim? Who said that being honest about our journey means that we are acting like a victim? Is that even true? I think not. But let's dive into this today. Hi, Cindy. Hi, Susanna. So good to be together in this way.
Hi.
Hello.
So happy to see your faces. And today, I think you are both amazing guests to speak on this topic and have a great conversation surrounding what's the difference between truth-telling or sharing our truth, sharing our stories, sharing our unique and complicated and beautiful and brutal lives versus having a victim mentality. And this whole idea for the episode was just born out of a conversation in our private Facebook group for We Are Brave Together, where I saw some discussion, some threads, and I thought, let's talk about it.
It's such an important distinction in terms of the way that we exist psychologically through our days.
So tell me more about that, Cindy.
So I think probably everybody who's listening to this podcast is experiencing a life that has challenges and presents itself with really challenging, hard moments. And there's an element of acknowledging what is hard and challenging and painful. There's an aspect of ourselves, I think I can speak for myself, that is sometimes hesitant to acknowledge those painful things for fear that they will drag me down a deep, dark hole that I won't be able to come out of. At the same time, there's also the ability to express and honor those challenging moments and make a choice not to live in that space. But I will say, and please interrupt me, but I feel like for the most part with my daughter, Mira, you know, after 21 years of changing diapers, after 21 years of not being able to easily have a conversation without being interrupted, whining that happens frequently, I've chosen to accept those parts of our lives, the things that we can and cannot do. I also am very aware that my husband and I will often not talk about those challenging moments because I know for me, it's a protection mechanism because I feel like if I speak about those challenging things with him, he will then also be pulled down to those. And I feel like one of us always has to stay in a higher functioning, safe place, right? So we often don't talk about those challenging things. At the same time, I've purposely chosen to live a life of accepting those challenges and finding where I can find the joy, where I can find connection with my daughter, with my other kids, with our family as a whole, accepting what we can and cannot do, and then finding the connection in other ways and accepting that our family isn't like many other families that I know. That said, we recently had an experience where I just assumed that Mira, after the age of 21, by the time she turns 22, that she would qualify for residential placement. knowing full well that there probably isn't a residential placement that I would approve of, but in the act of trying to build something for her, I just assumed she would qualify. So needless to say, I was beyond devastated when we got a letter saying that she didn't qualify. Mira is somebody who requires assistance for every single daily living task. And to the point where I thought they had made a mistake. Like, I really thought they sent us somebody else's letter. Like, this just can't be. And we've been attempting to build a community for her. So when I then got confirmation that the letter was accurate, I was beside myself. These hopes and dreams that I had for her. Like, it took me years to even accept that perhaps I would be okay with her living somewhere that is not within our home. And then getting excited about what we could potentially create for her. And then feeling like that's been pushed out the window. So this has taken me a long time to get to. The exercise that I had to do was in realizing that the picture I painted in the assessment, I spoke about what an incredible human being she is. And I think one distinction that I've made is that my daughter as a human being and my connection to her as a parent cannot be brought down. And I value that beyond anything else. And I am so blessed to have her in my world. That said, all of the things that fall under the rubric of caretaking is exhausted and hard and challenging, and I'm tired. So what we had to do was write a letter to appeal. And so for a week, I had to switch my mindset into that place of suffering and write a letter in and really focus on all the ways in which, for lack of a better word, how my daughter is a burden to our family, right? Writing all the things on how it affects me mentally, our family mentally, my other kids mentally, physically, all of that stuff. So for a week, I lived very strongly in this place of lack, in this place of feeling like this is so unfair and what we deserve, right? At the same time, because of the way that I've chosen to live most of my life with her, I could see that this was where I was, right? So I was in it at the same time I could observe myself in it. And what actually happened, so if we take this idea that everything is happening for us and not to us, for a week in writing this letter, I was in a very much in a place of, look what has happened to us. And yet I kept trying to remember, okay, what is going to come from this? Why is this? I was in tears every day. But what I realized was that in writing this letter, I actually gained more compassion for myself in everything that I do. I gained compassion and deeper understanding from my husband in hearing things like how he restricts his travel for work because he doesn't want to leave me alone because it's hard on me physically. I gained more appreciation for him. I gained more appreciation for every single one of us, every single mother, every single parent who is deeply immersed in caregiving. And so in doing this, I actually gained a deeper sense of compassion for all of us. And also even understanding more deeply why my daughter deserves to live amongst a team of caregivers and not us. So in the act of immersing myself into this is happening to me and unfairness, it was painful. And at the same time, I was so deeply grateful that that is not how I choose to constantly live because it is devastatingly painful. And I can see that if I chose to live there all the time, how I would be in much worse shape, how my daughter wouldn't be the person she is, how my other kids wouldn't be the people they are. Like, they've learned to have compassionate understanding and appreciation for this community. And I think of all those things, it would be so drastically different. So I hope that, absolutely. I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. I mean, it helps, I think, for our listeners to really understand the difference between truth-telling and a victim mentality is in just truth-telling, sharing our stories. We have a mindset, like you said, that everything is happening for me, for my awakening, for my transformation, for my growth, versus this is happening to me. And look at what's happening to me. Look what's happening to my family. Look what's happening to my child. I think that you really illustrated that.
Because the energy in which I bring to my family and to my daughter, if I live in that place of victimhood, is no good. Right? It's really detrimental. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It like this actually reinforces this whole notion of soul care and self-care and taking care of ourselves so that, yes, those things are challenging. And what I'm leaving with it is I do not want to ever give up being a parent for her. Like, I feel so deeply blessed, and I don't want to be a caretaker for the rest of my life. I don't want to be a caregiver for the rest of my life. So, like, mm-hmm. really seeing those two things as separate and acknowledging them, owning them, and discussing them, I feel brings me closer to the rest of my family. And I see how I have not even allowed myself to do that over so many years. But that's very different than the place of victimhood and that suffering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Susanna, what would you add?
Yeah, you know, Cindy, that's so, so good. And it's always such a good reminder for me to realize that everything for me is also so tied into my energy and intention around, yeah. you know, certain experiences. And I will say that I can have the energy and intention of wanting attention and feeling like I need someone to say, to hear me in my pity party. There are times when I feel like I'm asking for that and I'm craving that. Interesting, right? And there are other times when I'm really like, no, this is what is real and true for me right now. And I'm going to just release it. And it might sound the exact same way, but the energy might be very different. And so I'm thinking and I'm being reminded of times when I was married to my daughter Arizona's father, and I was unable to speak up and ask for help. And so I would just try to get his attention in ways like, I am dying on the vine. Today was so hard and stressful and da 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 da. To the point where he would, you know, come home from work and just be like, why are you always complaining about our child? And I was thinking, I'm not trying to complain about our child. I just want to feel seen. I want to be heard. I just want some attention, and I'm not getting it from you. But I didn't know how to say that, right? Okay, so there is that very big piece of my life. Where we are divorced and we co-parent. And so it's different now, the dynamic. And I have learned so much about myself in terms of just honoring this life for exactly how it is, honoring my child for exactly who she is, being so grateful to be her mother, and caregiving is not my jam. You know, 24-hour caregiving is just, it's not my thing. I did not sign up for this life. I will do everything I can to get my daughter into situations where I am not the one carrying that burden 24 hours a day. So yeah, I think it's a little bit of both and sprinkling sometimes. And I just always come back to a place of self-compassion as well, just like honoring, like, one of the most amazing pillars, I think, of We Are Brave Together is being able to share from a place of not comparing. And I feel like I'm always on the end of like, oh, my life's not that hard. I have nothing compared to, right? Fill in the blank. But then when I sit back and sort of take the temperature of like what my experience is right now in this moment, it is often like, yeah, I'm in pain. Yeah, this is really hard. My heart is dying right now. I am so worried. I'm so anxious. And so who's to say that that is not real for me right now, right? So I have to just remind myself, yes, have so much compassion for those painful bits, those ouchy parts that are like often prevalent, sometimes underneath the surface, but so easily accessed. And, and so just a reminder to know that, yes, I can be so grateful for this life and what can be in this thriving relationship I feel like I have with my daughter, and embracing the pain, embracing the ouchy parts, like just the pits in the stomach, those moments where it's just like ouch,
right?
Which happen often every day in some way.
And with both, what comes to mind as you were talking, Susanna, is that whether we're in a frame of mind where we're just sharing, right? We're just sharing what's going on, right? We're not saying, poor me. We're just sharing. Mm-hmm. Or we're in the place of, poor me. Look at my horrible life. Look what's happened to us. Both people, both women, both caregivers want to be seen. We just want to be seen and heard and understood. We just need a little compassion, whichever place that you're in. It's just a begging to be seen, heard, understood, validated, and given compassion, right? Yeah. And certainly there are different energies, whichever mindset you are in. And I think it changes us. It changes our outlook, and it changes our ability to realize how much we have choices, depending on which place you're in, right? I mean, I think I love Dr. Edith Eger and her book, The Choice, and she's a Holocaust survivor. And she talks a lot in her memoir about victimhood. And let me just share a couple quotes from her. Suffering is universal, but victimhood is optional. There's a difference between victimization and victimhood. We are all likely to be victimized in some way in the course of our lives. This is life. It comes from the outside. It's the neighborhood bully. It's the boss who rages, the spouse who hits, the lover who cheats, and the discriminatory law, the accident that lands you in the hospital. Victimhood comes from the inside. No one can make you a victim but you. We become victims not because of what happens to us, but when we choose to hold on to our victimization, we develop a victim's mind, a way of thinking and being that is rigid or blaming or pessimistic, stuck in the past. And she says we become our own jailers when we choose the confines of the victim's mind. And so what is our purpose of doing this episode today? We're not here to say, oh my gosh, all you people who have the victim mindset, like, shame on you. We're just trying to shine a light on the difference, shine a light. And maybe someone out there is going, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize that I was stuck in this place because I'm grieving, because I'm suffering, because I'm hurting, because my child is suffering. I didn't realize I was like stuck in this pity party. I just thought I was being honest about my pain.
Right. Jessica, what I love about that quote that you read is that, as she's saying, it's not the experience that happens to us. It's the story we tell ourselves about that experience, which makes a difference. And so we can change that story. But I think what is so real for all of us is that I think so much of our, whether it's a pity party or the pain, comes from the stories that we've been told and stories we continue to tell ourselves of the way that we expected things to be and how things are different. And while it's so important for us to acknowledge those and that those are the fantasies and the expectations, they're still the reality that we're living in, right? So I think, I feel like it's multifaceted, but there's a piece of honoring and acknowledging like, oh, well, that's just because I thought it was supposed to be this way. And acknowledge that, but that is the culture we're living in. So yes, it's still painful, right? And I think personally what I've experienced is that there will always be those pain points, but it how deep I let those pain points penetrate is up to me, right? So where I think, you know, I look back at something like when Mira would have started a kindergarten class with her peers who were the younger siblings of my son's friends, I would leave in tears. And now little things like whether it's going off to college or whether it's moving out of the house or whether it's any of those things, there's still like, there's always moments, little pangs of hurt, and yet they don't go as deep. But I think that's only because I now know how to hold that and have compassion for that and accept where we are and then find those other places of connection. So it's not that they go away, but there's so much truth to the depth of the pain and the stories we tell ourselves.
And you know, I think this is a beautiful opportunity for those of us who are having an aha moment right now, like, oh wow, so I am living in this place. Like I'm, you know, I've set up my permanent residency in this place because I'm suffering and because I'm in pain and because I don't feel in control and so many other things. For me, I think it's such an opportunity for us to also know that there is another way to be. There's another way to live. there's another energy that we can take on. It is possible. And how exciting is that? And I'm not saying that it's going to be that way for every single second of your life moving forward, but just even knowing that there is that option, there's another option. Because as you were saying, Jessica, yes, we all want to feel seen and heard. I will add that we also do not want to feel alone. I mean, if I go back and look at so many of my journals from back in the beginning, I often wrote, I feel so alone. I feel all alone. And, wanted to scream from the mountaintops, like, somebody pay attention to me. Pay attention. You know, I still feel myself craving that now. But it's yes, to be in this mindset of what is possible, you know, abundance, all of the things that are available to us that we just maybe can't see.
And if I can add one thing to that, is when we look at the pressure and the stories we place on ourselves for who we believe we are to be for our families and our children. And I feel like that's where so much of the liberation is. That's where it's been for me, is either in the clarification of the message of, you don't have to do this alone. You can ask for help. You don't need to be all things for Mira. Right? Because I see how I get pulled into that all the time. I think that has caused my greatest suffering, is not only the stories of who I thought we would be as a family, but who I thought I was supposed to be for her.
Right. And I don't know about either of you two, but I was raised very much by, you know, just examples of martyrhood all around me. So the major female players in my life, role models in my life, were martyrs. And that was, it was sort of like you were revered for the suffering in your life. And so that is, you know, my story of origin. And so I'm adding now this extra layer of extreme caregiving and parenting a child with disabilities. And so then, of course, for sure, I am the queen martyr, right? Queen.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And so you have to fight against what was modeled and taught and ingrained into you so that you do not completely crash and burn in martyr motherhood.
Yeah, because how dare you be happy and joyful and, you know, having an easy life?
Right.
You know, that's...
Right.
That's too worldly and secular in my upbringing.
Right.
You know? You just, you suffer, you're of service, you're just a quiet servant to everyone around you.
Mm-hmm. I would love for us to give examples of, here's a compassionate mindset and here is a victim mindset specifically for caregivers. So one, we've already said, a victim mindset would be, I can't ask anyone for help. I have to do it all.
Yep.
A compassionate mindset would be, wow, this is a lot to do 24/7. I am not meant to carry this alone. I must ask for help. I can ask for help. What would be another example?
So what Cindy was saying earlier around, this is happening to me. So there's the victim mindset. And the self-compassionate, sort of abundant mindset then is, so this is happening for me and for my awakening. And just knowing, and knowing that, not knowing when that message is going to come through, but it is.
Yes. Right. I think that's so important, Susanna, is that we don't always know when that, when that message is going to be clear to us. Yes. And it also doesn't mean that when we switch from this is happening to me to it's happening for me, that all of a sudden it's all good. Right. And all happy and joyful. Right. It's still painful. We can be in an emotionally exhausting place and feel those feelings and still believe that somewhere this is happening for my own awakening, right? To really believe that there is a message for me under this. I don't know what it is. I really want to know when it's coming, but that somewhere it is. And yeah, so I'll think, if I go back to the example that I was presenting, was, I can't believe this is happening to us. Nothing ever works for us. I can't believe we're going to be caregivers for the rest of our lives. If this is happening for me, or if I move to that place of compassion, then it's, yeah, you know what? Being a full-time caregiver, no one can do this on their own 24 hours a day. We do need help. And so therefore, I have even more compassion for me, more understanding for what my daughter needs. And I am going to advocate, you know, if this appeal doesn't work, then we'll go to hearing. Right. And so it can also be fighting, but not, again, fighting from a place of what I believe is the best for all of us and not, you can't do this to us.
I just got the chills because there is a difference.
There's a huge difference.
There is a difference. And I hope our listeners felt that, can see that, can, you know, take that in, because it is so different. It is such a different place. And one place has so much more energy for the fight versus, I feel like, the other, how dare you do this to me? I feel like you're almost shooting yourself in the foot. That negative, angry energy is only going to take you down. Yes, it can fuel the fight, but it will take you down mentally.
And physically.
And physically, yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In our experience, I do think that we've had a lot of advocates and attorneys who have helped us, you know, get services and support in place for Arizona over the years. And I always have gravitated toward the attorneys who are coming from a place of, you know, what is possible for Arizona. But there are a lot of attorneys out there who are just so ready to fight and, you know, beat the system down and let the system know how awful they are and how they have not been able to accommodate this and that and whatever. And I feel like that is sort of a very generic example of victim mentality versus compassion mentality, in that the victimhood is kind of like, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here, but when you ask people how they're doing, and they're just like, same shit, different day, you know? And it's just like that mentality of, so of course my day is awful because it's the same shit, just a different day. So every day I wake up and there's going to be more shit, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to the compassionate version, which is, today was really hard. Today was so awful and so challenging. And I just want to dig a hole and crawl into it and never come out. And tomorrow is a new dawn, and there's a new day, and there's new opportunity, and there's new possibility for a different kind of day, right? Mm-hmm. And tomorrow might be worse than today, which often is the case, right? Oh man, I wish I had yesterday's bad, you know, because today is so much worse. But you know, just sort of like, just believing that other things are possible. And we all know that we all have had good days. We all have had great days. Mm-hmm. So that's possible for us. It really, really is.
Right.
So just tapping into that and knowing that and hoping for that. Why not?
What do we have to lose by hoping and believing and embracing what's possible? All three of us have had many, many, many hits to our families. And we will still say, what is possible? Tomorrow is a new day. Today is a new day. We have to. We have to, because that, even if we don't get the answers that we want in the timing that we want, or in the delivered in the way that we want exactly, that mindset is going to save us from falling down into a pit of utter despair and non-functioning. Yeah. So people might laugh at us for our hope and our faith and our belief and our mindset, but we're going to be able to sustain our caregiving roles and responsibilities better, stronger, more clear with this type of mindset, this compassionate, hopeful mindset.
And it's not even that we want to wake up the next morning and everything's going to be different, right? It's that we can show up differently. And that when we show up differently, we are able to see different possibilities, right? So like, I was laser focused on this program. If we don't get funding, then that goes away and I will cry and I will go down a hole and I will need to recover and have compassion for myself and all of that for quite a while. And then I believe that we'll come up with something else.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
And, but it's in the way that we show up to those moments, those situations, those circumstances. And that mm-hmm. we can change on a daily basis. So it's not that we're hoping that, you know, I'm going to wake up tomorrow, my daughter is going to be verbal, right? Or that she's not going to need the assistance that she does. But I can show up for her. I can alleviate some other things on my plate so that I can show up for her. And I can just believe to see the world a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Again, I'm going to quote Edith Eger. She says, "But over time, I learned that I can choose how to respond to the past. I can be miserable or I can be hopeful. I can be depressed or I can be happy. We always have that choice, that opportunity for control. I'm here. This is now. I've learned to tell myself over and over until the panicky feeling begins to ease. I'm here. This is now."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what's important also to note and to honor and to be mindful of is that, again, like we might not be able to access the happy right now. And so to not beat ourselves up about that, to not berate mm-hmm. ourselves around, be happy, like just be happy, figure it out, just be happy, right? There should not be any more pressure or the to-do-ness around having to be and feel a certain way. We have the choice for sure, right? We do have that choice. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And just let it come, you know, in its own timing. I can relate to the dysfunction. You know, I can relate to the times of falling into the, I call it my deep, dark abyss, right? Mm-hmm. Deep, dark abyss of like despair. And in those moments, knowing that I do have the choice to see things a different way or feel a different way or choose happy or find joy or, you know, experience a little bit of soul care or a nugget of, you know, self-care, whatever it may be. And I can't get there right now in this very moment.
Right. And it makes me think it's a practice. Sorry, Cindy, I didn't want to cut you off, but it's a practice, like practicing self-compassion, practicing a compassionate mindset towards your suffering and your circumstances is a practice. And so it's not instantaneous. You know, yes, we might make that choice today, but it's not an instantaneous access to joy and gratitude. It's a practice.
100% at the crux of all of this is perhaps what makes us suffer the most is the belief that we are not worthy of feeling or experiencing something different. Mm. And when we truly believe that we are worthy of taking a break, of asking for help, of giving something to ourselves so that we can show up differently, I think that's when we begin to allow ourselves to have compassion for ourselves and begin that practice.
I agree.
Yeah. So good.
So good. Mm-hmm. That is a great place to end. We could continue going and going and going, girls. There's so much to still unpack. But thank you so much for your time and your insight and your wisdom and your beautiful energy. It's so good to be with you both.
Thank you, Jessica, for bringing up this oh so important topic.
So happy to be here.
Thank you both. All right. Well, good to be with you, and we'll see you again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening today. Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together Podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization called We Are Brave Together? We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms by offering support groups that are virtual and in person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats. And we offer retreat scholarships. We represent all 50 of the United States and 21 countries around the world. We are here to remind you that you are not alone. You are braver and stronger than you think, and that girlfriends who get you are sacred and mandatory. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood await you.